Welcome back to this edition of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata here at Black Hollywood Live. I got a diva in the house. I talked to a Ford and Ferrari star. Oh, child, it's just way too much to keep up with. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, 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 it's your girl, Hal. We got mood lighting. Yes, yes, I love it. Thank you, Josh. This is your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. The Curvy Film Critic. It is episode 90. I have done 90 of these bad boys over here at Black Hollywood Live. So this is how it... I know. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited. So this is how it works over here with The Curvy Critic. I give you some reviews, I give you some interviews, I give you a little bit of news if I have some time, and then y'all let me know how you feeling about it in the chat room as you always do. So I'm going to get right into it with my first film before I talk to my first guest because, you know, she's a diva. I got to give her her proper introduction. So Uncut Gems is a film that was released by A24. It's directed by Benny and Josh Softee. I think that's how you pronounce their name. And if I mispronounced it, my brothers, I'm sorry. You can come and get me at Black Hollywood Live anytime you want to. But it's written and directed by them, and it's starring Adam Sandler. And Adam Sandler is playing this man who is very troubled. He's got a gambling addiction. He's got a female addiction, meaning, you know, he is dealing with multiple women. And he's very charismatic, and he has a store in New York where he's always hustling, trying to make something happen. But he finds himself in a very serious series of high stakes, which ultimately result in some unsavory things that for him at the end of the movie. So I'm trying to get around not telling you what's happening with the movie because I want you guys to go see it because it's actually not going to hit theaters until Christmas Day. But I wanted to get on your radar. It's called Uncut Gems by Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler is not the SNL Adam Sandler in this movie. You have not seen this Adam Sandler before, but I'm hoping that we get to see him again. He is putting his foot in this performance. It's very strong. It's very grounded. His acting has come along milestones across the decades that he's been out here. And a lot of times comedians that go into drama, they're not taken seriously. But this year is changing because the Critics' Choice nominations came out this year and Adam Sandler and Eddie Murphy both got some noms. So I'm hoping that the trajectory of that particular thing is going to change. It also stars Idina Menzel, who we all know from Frozen. You know, she's the let it go into the unknown chick from Frozen. But again, this is not the Frozen Idina Menzel. This is not the Rent Idina Menzel. This is not even the Wicked Idina Menzel. This is an Idina Menzel that you have not seen before ever in your life. And I was hoping against hope that she would get some love during this award season, but it's not looking like it's going to fall her way. But hopefully in the future it will, because she is freaking slaying it in this movie. So I just want you guys to be on the lookout for it. Again, it's called Uncut Gems. It's starring Adam Sandler. Idina Menzel is produced by A24, and it is written and directed by Benny and Josh Softee. Now, I have a diva in the house. Let me just tell you about this diva. Her name is Michaela Diette. I said it right, right?
Diette.
Michaela Diette. Michaela is starring in a film that is about this young woman who is gorgeous on the inside, gorgeous on the outside, but society is trying to dictate what her talent and her beauty is, and even her smarts. Because at one point, there's some unsavory stuff that goes down with the record label, which happens all the time. But when you are a person of color sometimes, when you are a woman of color sometimes, people try to take advantage of that. The film is called Hold On. It is written, starring, and directed by Tarek. How you pronounce your last name, Tarek?
Tarek Tomei.
He in the studio. Y'all can't see him, but I can. And it's beautifully done. It's beautifully shot. And my girl Michaela is starring in it. Welcome to the Curvy Critic, girl.
Hey, girl.
So, and she flew in. She busted her booty to get here. I appreciate you
so much for coming in.
Oh, yeah, of course. So let's get into it. I want to talk about this image versus talent thing because that was a very important part of the film. Yeah. It was sprinkled here and there throughout, but it was so much bigger than that. I mean, it's dealing with how people who have loved ones that are addicted or no longer here as a result of addiction, how the ones left behind deal with it, whether those people that are addicted or alive or not, you still have that whole family that is dealing with it in a completely different way. There's that one scene with you and your brother on Skid Row where he doesn't recognize you. Yeah. It's going to make me cry. Mm-hmm. Your work in that scene and the earnest honesty and vulnerability that you bring to that scene is really quite special and it's quite stellar. And I enjoyed watching you in this film, very much so.
Thank you.
But the image versus talent thing, before we came on camera, we were talking about when you go to audition for shows like, you know, The Voice, America's Got Talent, American Idol, what happens? And you were sharing a story with me about what they said to you. Do you mind recounting just a little? You don't have to say all of
Not
it, but
all.
Just a little bit of it.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know because they go there and they think, oh, man, my voice is on point. I'm ready to go. I'm looking good. And they don't realize there's this whole other narrative going on that they're working against. So it's not just a level playing field. I'll just say that. You know, I've auditioned for all those shows probably about 26, 27 times. And
well, hold up. Wait a minute. Did you say 26 or
yes,
27 times?
Yes, I did.
Well, girl, you a good one. Because after that first time when they said no, I would have been like, deuces, I'm out.
You know what? The first time I ever auditioned for the most well-known one, are we allowed to say names?
Look.
But, you know. Yeah.
We know which one it is. You ain't got to say names. I don't want you to incriminate yourself.
Right. You know, and people had, because I, you know, I came from not a lot, you know what I mean? And people had raised money for me to come down to L.A., got me a hotel. They were like, I know this is, you're going to do it. You're the one. We know, you know. And so they paid for it. I came down and everyone's texting me, you know, I know you made it. I can't wait for you to, you know, you'd be on the show. And the first time, I mean, I was so devastated that I stayed in that hotel room for like all day crying with the sheets closed, you know, I mean, with the windows closed and just under the sheet, just like, how is this possible? Because what you see in the film, so this movie is based on true events. It's based on events that have happened in my life. We've taken some creative license, of course, but it was really important to put this in the film. And I was talking to my best friend and the director, Tarek Tomei, and I was like, I want to shed light on this because people think they're going to these auditions and they're just going to do their best and that's going to be good enough. But what we don't know is that, number one, there's like five cuts and you're first auditioning for like a low, low level producer. And they're only told, I want this look at this tent and that's it. And this is, I found this out after like probably the 10th time auditioning, right? Is that each tent only is allowed to accept a certain look. So say you're a great singer, you're a country, and you went to the like R&B tent. Sorry.
That was me.
Too bad.
I was country and went to the R&B tent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're like, in order, especially in the beginning, in order to dwindle down those huge numbers of 100,000 people, they literally just by chance cut people out and go, okay, well, we got an R&B person at the R&B and they happen to be good. Let's put them in. It's really unfortunate. But if you have, you know, like a weight issue or you're struggling with your weight, then it brings a whole nother level of, I would say, opposition.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up because this is what I wanted to tell you on the air as opposed to off the air.
Yeah.
So I'm a graduate of Howard University. And one of the people, yes, Mecca Bison, one of the people that graduated from Howard, Frenchie graduated. So yes. Frenchie Davis went to Howard University. Frenchie auditioned for American Idol. And I remember the whole time she was on American Idol, they were giving her the rah-rahs. And that was before they found out that she had these pictures. Mm-hmm. They gave Jennifer Hudson a hard time, too. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Hudson got an Emmy, a Grammy. Mm-hmm. The only thing she don't have is a Tony. Mm. So this is what I want people to know that are listening, that are watching, that have talent, that believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what you look like. It's about what's in your heart.
Yeah.
It's about the music that you make.
That's
it's
right.
about the quality of the music. And at the end of the day, it's about how your music reaches and touches
That's
those
right.
people in their heart.
That's right.
You know, sometimes people will hear a lyric and it strikes a chord for them in their life and where they are right then and there in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
When you sing that song, the one at the I can't remember the
Hold
name.
On.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
When you sing Hold On at the end.
Mm-hmm.
My sister.
I'm so glad.
I was like, ooh, I want to write down the lyrics because I wanted to sing it with you, but I don't have the lyrics. But I was like, and I sound like Princess and the Frog today, so I can't do it anyway. But that's what I want people to know about that particular thing. Yeah. And you're right about that whole 10 situation. Yeah. It's the whole situation.
Well, and there was that. And then there's other producers that I went through. So maybe I would go through the first three cuts, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would come back to Burbank, you know, and then audition again. And then they would let me play piano and sing a couple more songs. And then I would come through and then they, you know, they'd be looking me up and down, be like, yeah. We're going to go ahead and say it's going to be a no. I remember one time, they're all a blur now, but one time I because you audition with 10 people at a time. You all step up one at a time, and then you hear each other. You know what I'm saying? And you're all in this together, and you camaraderie, you know. But by the end, I went, you know, went up, and I gave my best Vision of Love, you know, Mariah Carey. I was going for it. And they were like, okay, everybody step forward. Yeah, sorry, not today, you know. People were incensed. The people I was auditioning with, they were like, no. You are putting her in. You have to put her in. At least forget about us. Put her in, please. He was like, I know you probably don't understand, and I wish I could, but my hands are tied. And he's like, you know, I'm not able to say yes.
That makes me mad.
I'm like, for real?
I'm feeling some kind of way about that.
But that's in the movie, and we put that in there on purpose.
I know it is. That's why I brought it up, because it's a large part of the movie.
Body discrimination is something.
Body shaming is real.
Absolutely.
It's real.
Especially in the industry.
And I want people, especially in this industry, and I want people to be a little bit more cognizant of it, because, you know, behind the weight, behind the booty, behind the thighs,
come on.
There's a human being behind that. You know, there's a flesh and blood human being with feelings. So stop being so mean and so inconsiderate, and pay attention to the talent. Girl, please, don't get me on my soapbox. Yeah. I am not the one. I'm not that girl. I also wanted to know, did you encounter the same discrimination with your acting and modeling careers?
Yeah, I mean, I've done some modeling for plus size, you know, clone line.
It's
been great. Hey! And wear tour pants, tour shoes.
I know it's tour.
Right. But, and it's been great to see the inclusivity of some of these designers. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, the roles that I've been cast in are typecast. You know what I'm saying? In my life, I'm the leading lady. Hello. You know what I mean? In your life, you're the leading lady. Why can't I be a leading lady? And that's so great. The thing I love about when I met Tarek is, like, he didn't see my weight. He was like,
he saw that
he
voice.
He was looking at the, he was listening. And it was the first time someone had actually just listened to me sing and then been like, oh, and your heart and your mind and all this stuff. You know what I mean? And was like, we got to make the world. I was reminding him the other day that he had said, you know, even if people hate the movie, let's say they hate the movie, whatever, I'm going to make them sit down and listen to you for 2 hours, because people will not listen.
Because
they're
your
just
voice
looking.
Is insane. Thank your you. Voice is insane. Another thing that I loved was the scene at the Grove.
Yeah,
I don't want to say too much about it, but the scene at the Grove, I don't want to give away, but the scene at the Grove, ooh, I wish, I wish people had that much nerve to put people on blast like that, but y'all have to go see Hold On to get it. One last thing I want to talk to you about is, when was the first time that you knew you could really blow people away and emotionally move them with your voice? When was the first time you had that moment? And how did your faith coincide and interact with that?
That's a really good question. Well, I will say this. The first time I knew it could sing, like really sing, I was not a child prodigy like these, you know, people that use, like, what are you feeding these kids, man? You know what I mean? And they're just singing Whitney Houston at age. I was not like that. I literally prayed, and it's a long story, but I'll shorten it. I grew up in gospel choir, and I'm mixed, and it was a full black choir. My mom was the only white person, and it was me and my sister, and we were just like, we were trying so hard. And everyone had these voices that you could shake the room. You know what I'm saying? You know the kind of voices.
Yes, I do. I grew up in the church. I know.
Yes.
Those altos. Sounding like they got cornbread in their throat.
Yeah. And I was like, I want to sing like that. I want a big voice. I want to sing. And I was praying. We walked out of the rehearsal, and I was singing, Blessed Be the Name. I was just walking, and it was coming.
There's
and it was
that voice.
But it was real cute and tiny. And I was like, no, I want to really sing. I was like, oh God, please give me a voice that can really move people. And I kid you not, my mom is my witness. We're walking to the car, and I open my mouth, and this voice came out, not the voice I have now, but a big, round, beautiful voice. And I was like, and she was like, we were like, wait, what just happened? And literally, God touched me. God gave me that voice, and that's why I can't take credit for it. People are mad. I'm like, take it up with God. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't. I just opened my mouth, and it came out. Obviously, I've refined it, and I've studied. You know, I'm a student of the voice, and
Well, you have a degree in music, do
I
you
do.
Not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm classically trained as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you do your part, but, you know, you can polish a diamond, you know what I'm saying? You can't do much with nothing, you know what I'm saying?
So absolutely.
I'm thankful for that, but, you know, that was the first day I was like, wait a minute, this is a real thing, you know what I mean? Because I had a solo and I was 8 and it was not good. It was like, oh, how cute, get her off, you know? But so that was the first, so it's a two-part answer. That was the first day I was like, oh my gosh, I can sing. This is crazy. And it was a day I'll never forget. And I would say, you know, there's so many little moments, but I think all in all, like probably the day I was like, I can do this, I was in high school and I won a competition, and it was just like, I sang Hero by Mariah Carey. You know what I mean? And
that's everybody's go-to.
Yeah. It was at the time, it was like the height of difficulty. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
And I sang it, and I was wearing tennis shoes and a dress, and it was a hot mess, but it was cute. But I remember the lady told me, you know, you're the best here for sure, but we got to refine you. Like, why are you wearing tennis shoes with a dress and stuff? I was like, it's my style. But everybody, so there was some negativity, but everyone who came up to me was crying. They were literally in tears. Like, I've heard that song so many times, but I've never heard it. And I was like,
how did that make you feel to know that you can make people feel visceral, have that visceral reaction to something that's coming out of your voice?
You know what? It makes me feel amazed by God. Like, honestly, I'm telling you, I say this all the time. People are like, yeah, right. When I sing, I am shocked. I'm still not used to it. I open my mouth, I go, what the heck? Why me, God? Thank you. You know, it's like when someone's beautiful. You didn't do nothing to be beautiful. God gave you a beauty gift. Hello, look at these cheeks. Okay, look at these beautiful teeth. You can take care of it, and you better moisturize and do your thing, but there's nothing you can do.
You said moisturize.
You know what I'm saying? Keep it moisturized. I'm just saying, you know, it to me, it's such a gift, and it comes with such a responsibility, because I can also use that, and just like any creative person, you can use that to better this world and bring people joy and hope and inspiration. Or you can be like, man, life sucks and it's depressing and I just want to give up, you know. And what we try to do with our company, Diet Dream Productions, is we're trying to put the hope back in the music, back in the art, back in the, you know. And it's not saying we can't dive deep into characters that are deep, because we do in this movie and other movies that my partner's working on. But we want to show the hope that is available. And, you know, I remember when I lost my sister, I was like, okay, I can focus all day on the fact that she's not here with me. And I was diving into depression. I mean, bad, really bad, like clinically. Mm. And then I was diving into some recovery, because I'm real big on, like, you know, getting your spirit right, getting your mind right. Mm-hmm. And one of my sponsors was saying, look, you're focused on one part of the truth. Can you focus on the rest of the truth? The other truth is that you had this beautiful time with her. You know where she is. You know what I'm saying? You're only focused on she's not here, she's not here, she's not here. And that's going to take you down a hole. And I feel like as creatives, sometimes we create stuff and we just go, this is horrible, this is horrible, this is horrible. The movie's over. And we walk out there and we're just like, oh, I feel sick. Mm. You know, we want to show the truth. We're not scared of the truth, but we're also like, there, this part is also true. Mm-hmm. There's beauty, even in a brother who's addicted. There's moments in this film where we really hope people will know that if you have an addicted loved one, it's not over for you. You know, it's not over for them. There's hope. You know what I mean? So
I love that you said that. It's a long answer, but you know what? It was a much needed answer. And it was the answer that is going to entice people and encourage people to go see Hold On.
So
I want you to tell them where it's going to be seen, where they can find it. And because this is broadcast globally.
Yeah.
So tell them where they can find it. And then I'm going to ask you to do Someone You Done.
Okay.
Go ahead. Come on. Tell us where they can find you and Hold On.
Y'all check out Hold On. The movie's called Hold On in your local theaters. It's select theaters. You can look on adamtickets.com and put in your zip code, and it'll tell you what's the nearest theater. You can look on Fandango. You can look on AMC. We do know that it's focused on certain areas. So we want to make sure that, you know, if it's anywhere near you, you please go see this film. Support this film.
What's the website for the film?
It's www.holdonthemovie.com.
And where can people find you?
So you can find me, all my handles are Mikayla Diett, M-I-C-A-Y-L-A-D-E-E-T-T-E, on Instagram, on the Twitters.
And where can they find your production company information and site? And where can they find Tarek?
Yeah, so Tarek, T-A-R-E-K underscore T-O-H-M-E. Our production company, we don't have a social media right now. We're running it through our own. But you can look at my website, MichaelaDiette.com, M-I-C-A-Y-L-A, again, D-E-E-T-T-E, that's my real name, I'm not trying to be complicated, .com. Everybody's like, why are you making up this artist name? That's I'm like, it's my real name.
It's your real name. But I want to sing something to you. I'm not going to ask you to do something. I changed my mind. I'm going to sing something to you because this is how I feel about you. And I know you have sung this particular song a zillion times, and people have been known and quoted as saying that they've never heard it the way they've heard you sing it. Mm. They didn't hear me. They didn't hear it the way I'm about to sing it a zillion times. So I ain't trying to be you, but I just want to show my appreciation for you being here. Let me find the right key. Amazing grace.
Girl, come on.
How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. That's it, girl. But
No. We need more.
No. But that is me showing appreciation for you being here.
Oh, my God.
I so appreciate you being here and taking time out. And I love the thank you. And I love the fact that you brought a posse with you.
Yes.
I love it.
Can I give one more plug?
Yes, ma'am.
So we just finished the soundtrack. So I wrote most of the songs for the soundtrack, and it's out now. Please check it out. The soundtrack is just Hold On, movie from the motion picture Hold On, but we have that song that she just sang. We do even have hard copies. We have CDs that we made. If you want to get one, go on my website, MichaelaDiette.com.
She gave me one.
Yes. Yay. Special edition. It's got special little things in there, but you can check it out on iTunes, Spotify. Please check it out. There's some really great songs on there.
I love it. Thank you, Miss Michaela. I appreciate
you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. I'm just going to intro this film real quick before we say totally goodbye to you. Film. Interview, I meant to say. So Tracy Letts is a Broadway performer, actor, director, and you can see him right now in Little Women and Ford versus Ferrari as Henry Ford. I believe Henry Ford II, and if that's wrong, I'll fix it when we come back. But I just want to give one final thank you to Miss Michaela Diette for coming in to talk to me about Hold On. Check it in. Check your local listings to find out where it is playing. Please go to all the sites that she listed to listen to the music and the soundtrack. It is absolutely fantabulous. All right. So take a listen and a look to this interview with Tracy Letts from Ford versus Ferrari. I'm a huge fan of yours. I was an actress in Avenue Q across the street when August Osage was on Broadway. So I've been following you for quite some time.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
What do you think your perfect lap would be as a writer?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, the thing that is described in the movie, that sensation of a kind of weightlessness or being in the zone. I talked to some of the guys about it while we were making the movie, and we all agreed that such a thing exists. Probably it exists for anybody doing something well, doing something that they're adept at and doing it well. A moment where you get rid of the critic on your shoulder, get rid of the demons whispering in your ear, and just in the zone. You just enjoy the thing you're doing. For me, it's not necessarily a result. It's more a feeling or a sensation that, I'm unburdened by the critical self-talk. It's just all flowing. I suppose as a writer, that's when it feels the best, when it's just all flowing.
Do you have a favorite dream sports car?
I don't know anything about cars. I didn't know anything about cars before we started. I don't know anything about cars now. I can tell the difference between the red car and the blue car, and that's about as far as I get. I don't even own a car anymore. I totaled the last car I had, or it got totaled by an Uber driver. And so now I drive my wife's car. I drive her 2015 Toyota Camry. That's how much I know about cars.
That is hilarious. I know a lot about cars. My dad is a mechanic, so there's that. I love Mustangs. They're my favorite car. I'm on my third one, like I said. I'm so excited. Your dad passed away a little while ago, and you're playing Henry Ford II in Ford versus Ferrari. And there, even though we don't see Henry Ford, the father, in the film, there's that underlying tone of there being a dad versus son kind of thing happening. What do you think your dad would think about you in a film dealing with multi-million dollar cars?
I think my father would love this movie. My dad was a big fan of mine, a champion of mine. He thought I was a great actor. He thought I was a great actor before anybody else did. If he could see Ford versus Ferrari right now, he would get such a kick out of it. He was genuinely thrilled to it. You know, the father-son stuff that's in the movie, it's one of the reasons I wanted to do the project. It's not interesting to me just to play a guy who's a hard ass or who's a captain of his industry. I don't care about that. They can get a lot of people to do that. What interested me was that the movie was about people and that Ford was depicted in the screenplay as a guy with insecurities and vulnerabilities and flaws and love and respect. And I thought that's something I can play. That's something I would enjoy playing.
Being a writer, how challenging is it for you to do someone else's work? Because there has to be some type of challenge there. Because sometimes you might see a line or see a scene that you might feel may have worked differently, or you may have written it differently. It's a real fine line, and accepting what's already on the page from someone else and embracing it and not having that urge to kind of step in and do something. Did you feel that at all with James Mangold on this set?
No, you know, I think if I were an actor who was continually putting on my writer's hat to sit back and judge the work or talk about the script in such a way that, like, I wanted to rewrite the script, I don't know that how interested people would be in working with me as an actor. The truth is that as an actor, we're always expected to interrogate the text, to spend some time thinking about how to make the scene work, what the scene's about, who our character is, how we can help tell the story. My hope is that I've done this long enough now that I'm wearing my actor hat and I am interrogating the material as an actor, and I'm asking the questions an actor should ask. They're both forms of storytelling, writing and acting, and so I'm sure there's some crossover in terms of how I view a script. But yeah, I don't feel the need to go in and rewrite a script. For one thing, they're not paying me to do that. They're paying me to show up and act a role. So, like, if they want somebody to rewrite, they can pay me for that too.
I know that's right, Tracy. Speak on that. I want to congratulate you on two plays that you have. One that was playing here in L.A., Linda Vista, and your new play that's coming onto Broadway in the spring of next year. So congratulations on those.
Charles, thank you.
You're welcome. Charles McNulty of the L.A. Times described your plays as being broadly divided into two types, those with men behaving appallingly and those with women behaving abominably. The humor is very acerbic and they're poignantly, emotionally dramatic moments sprinkled throughout. What are your thoughts about how he's described your work?
Well, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the way that the critics describe my work. I mean, I'm always going to see it differently than they do. I don't necessarily see the characters in my plays behaving abominably or abhorrently. I think of them as behaving humanly. I think of the characters as behaving in ways that we can all see, understand, identify with. You know, the character in Linda Vista is not at his best when we see him in the play, but then plays aren't often about people at their best. They would be mostly dramatically inert if they were. My plays are about people struggling to do their best.
I've seen both Ford versus Ferrari and Little Women, and congratulations on both. How excited were you to reunite with Greta Gerwig again?
Oh, thrilled. I mean, she's such a great filmmaker, and she's such a great artist, an easy collaborator, and everybody just wants to be in the room where Greta is. She's so good at her job. She's so smart. She's so funny. You know, when she first told me she was doing Little Women, I said, well, that's a terrible idea. I don't know why you'd feel the need to do that again, because it's been done so many times. But her take on it is so smart and fresh, contemporary. I'm thrilled to be even a small part of Little Women. I'm delighted. I'll do anything Greta asks me to do.
Oh, that's lovely. I thank you so much for taking time out of your morning, wherever you may be, to speak with me. I appreciate
it.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Hey, so we had two great interviews today. The young lady, all of you all in the chat room, like, who is that? I said who it was, but y'all must have missed it because y'all came in late. But her name is Michaela Diette, D-E-E-T-T-E. She is the star of an independent film called Hold On, which is produced by Tarek Tomei, who actually is Flavor Flav's brother in real life. Y'all know Flavor Flav, the guy with the big clock around his neck? But anyway, that's who Michaela was. And the person that just finished speaking was Tracy Letts. He plays Henry Ford in Ford versus Ferrari, and he's also in Little Women. Ford versus Ferrari is in theaters right now. Little Women will open on Christmas Day. All right, so let me give a shout out to y'all in the chat room. And I've been hearing there's been some issues with notifications, so I'm going to try to get that together. I'm not quite sure what's happening with that. Excuse me, but I will do some investigating to find out. But let me just shout out Marlon Wallace, Yasna, Michael B., my boy, somebody new, Simone Matias. And yeah, so that's what those two interviews were. And we're going to, we're going to move on from there into the next interview. Not interview, I'm sorry, the next review, which is a film called A Hidden, what is going on with this? With A Hidden Life. So A Hidden Life is a, so the next three films that I'm talking about, they all open on December 13th, which is this coming week. So A Hidden Life is a film that is produced by Fox Searchlight Pictures. Oh my God, I cannot talk today. What is happening? It's written and directed by Terrence Malick. And it is about this Austrian who, his name is Franz, this Austrian named Franz, who is a conscientious objector, and he refuses to fight for the Nazis in World War II. You guys, I went into this movie, I didn't know what I thought I was going to see, and I was like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to like this. It's one of my favorite films of 2019. It's so beautifully shot, beautifully, beautifully shot by Jörg Widmer, the cinematographer. It deals with so many different subjects of, you know, somebody going against their own in World War II, how Hitler handled that, how the Nazis handled that, how the Jews handled that. It deals with the role of women during that time, how they oftentimes had to take over the household and, you know, keep it moving because they didn't have the men there to make things go for them. It shows the prejudice that happens when someone goes against the norm to back up what they believe in. It's a really complex film, but it's an excellent film. And it also deals with the ideology of what happens when you turn your back on something that you know and you grow a conscience. How many people grow a conscience and decide, I'm just going to go with what I know. And, you know, if people hate me, if I get spit on, if people throw rocks at me, then so be it. But that is the gist of this film. And it is excellent. It is written, directed, again, y'all, by Terrence Malick. It is produced by Fox Searchlight Pictures, and it will be in theaters on December 13th. The next film is a film that is called Richard Jewell. Now, back in the 60s, there was a situation, to be specific, I think it was the 1996 Olympics. Why do I keep saying the 60s? The 1996 Olympics, where there was this security guard who apparently saved a whole bunch of people from this bomb that went off, but then it got flipped on him. And instead of people thinking that he saved folks, that he was the one that actually planted the bomb. It has a stellar, star-studded cast. Paul Hauser is playing the role of Richard Jewell. Paul Walter Hauser, who you guys may remember, is that crazy redneck KKK guy in Black Klansman, Spike Lee's Black Klansman last year. He's such an excellent actor, but I believe this is the first time where a film is being touted as a star vehicle for him, and he's doing a wonderful job. It's directed by Clint Eastwood. Bobby Jewell is played by Kathy Bates. Bobby Jewell is Richard Jewell's mother. John Hamm plays Tom Shaw, the FBI agent who is intent on making sure that Richard Jewell goes to jail for this crime. He knows that he didn't do it, but he wants to railroad him and just, you know, get that notch on his belt to get that promotion. Olivia Wilde plays Kathy Scruggs, a reporter who's intent on getting this story to boost up her rep at her newspaper by any means necessary. And Sam Rockwell, he's always playing these crazy Southern, either lawyers, rednecks or whatever, but he's playing a lawyer in this film, and he plays the lawyer that ultimately goes about proving Richard Jewell's innocence. I don't think they ever make it to court for this. I think they have a meeting, and the way that the meeting goes down lets people know that there wasn't enough evidence to take him to court. But Richard Jewell was somebody that they made fun of him when he's a heavy set man. People made fun of him, called him Pillsbury Doughboy. The other security guards made fun of him. And all he wanted to do was be taken seriously as someone in law enforcement. And he considered law enforcement being a security guard. But he had the last laugh because after everything was said and done and he was cleared of all the charges against him, he ended up working for the same police department that was accusing him of committing that crime.
This film has heart. It has some really great performances, but it is not my favorite Clint Eastwood film. I'm just going to say that. And I love Clint Eastwood, but this was not my favorite. But again, it's called Richard Jewell. It will be released on December 13th, and it is produced by Warner Brothers. Last but not least is a film called Seaburg. It is a film that is directed by Benedict Andrews. It's for Amazon Studios. It stars Kristen Stewart in the title role. Margaret Qualley, however you pronounce her name. She plays Lynette, Jack Solomon's wife. Jack Solomon is a investigator who is following Gene Seberg throughout the film. And Anthony Mackie plays Hakeem Jamal, who is a Black Panther-ish type of character. And basically what's happening is this is a film that is inspired by real events in the life of Gene Seberg, who at the time was at the height of her career, and she was targeted by Herbert Hoover's FBI because of her political and romantic involvement with this civil rights activist slash Black Panther, Hakeem Jamal. Kristen Stewart is slaying in this film. She's so good, and she's having a really good year, y'all. She had Charlie's Angels out a couple of weeks ago. She's in this film. She is truly proving that Twilight is truly in her past, is behind her. But it's a great film. It also is being released on December 13th. So again, you guys, all three of these films that are coming out on December 13th, Richard Jewell, A Hidden Life, and Seaburg, they are all coming out. I only have a few minutes left, and I was going to go through the Critics' Choice announcements, but you can catch all of that on my Twitter and my Instagram and on my site, thecurvyfilmcritic.com. But I did want to give you a little heads up. So we're into the holiday season, ho, 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 and jingle, jangle, and all that. So next Sunday, I will not be here in real time. I will be broadcasting remotely from New York City, where I will be attending a press junket. So be on the lookout for notifications in terms of that broadcast, which will be December 15th. On December 22nd, the studio will be dark. But you know, your girl, I'm not going to let you down. I'm still going to put a show up on December 22nd. So I will post about it. Please pay attention to my Instagram and my Twitter post. If you don't have my handle, it's at The Curvy Critic everywhere. And I will post and tell you where to stream it, and I will do it in real time so we can talk and chat like we always do. And next week I will talk about, from location in New York, I'll talk about Bombshell, Little Women, Clemency, 1917, and I will break down all these announcements of all the different film critic organizations that have talked about all of the films that are being nominated leading right up into the Oscar award season for 2020. And of course, when December 29th rolls around, yeah, I got a show for you then too. But it'll be a recap of everything good I brought to you in 2019 right here at The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. It'll be a recap and a look down memory lane of this year here at Black Hollywood Live. I want to go back to the chat room, give a final shout out to everybody that joined me today. I appreciate y'all so incredibly much. Let me see. Do you have any news on The Banker? Yeah. The Banker is on hold for now, and The Banker is a film that was being produced by Apple TV. I talked about the controversy with that a few weeks ago, but that is on hold. I don't have any more news with that at the moment, but when I do, I will let you know. Hi, Jenna James. All right, guys, I am out of time. Thank you so much for joining me, your girl, Carla Renata, at The Curvy Critic right here at Hollywood Live, Black Hollywood Live, for episode 90. As usual, you can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. You can look for all the reviews that I talk about of all the films that I talk about here at thecurvyfilmcritic.com. You can find me right after this over at AfterBuzz TV doing the General Hospital Report, or the GH Report, as we like to call it. And until the next time, love, peace, and hair grease, y'all. I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.